Please forgive me. He paused, his hands still in her hair. Something inside him gave way, and he bent his head to kiss her again. 20 minutes of oblivion, God. That's all I ask. Afterward, he turned away from her. She lay silently, curled into a ball next to him. He cleared his throat.
I'm sorry, Anne. That was a mistake.
His voice was dry as dust again, the lawyer back in control. She turned to him, trying to twine herself around his body. He stiffened, but she pressed against him. It wasn't a mistake. We're married. Please forgive me and let me come home. I promise things will be different. He turned sharply.
It was fine before, Anne, as far as I knew. I had no idea there was a problem, and that's why you can't come home. How can I ever be sure you're happy? How can I ever trust you again?
Anne reached for him, but he evaded her. I miss the kids so much. I miss you. Charlie sat up, turning to sit on the edge of the bed. She wanted to touch his back, unwind the stiff muscles around his neck and shoulders, but she knew she wasn't allowed to. That moment had passed.
They miss you too, Anne. And so do I. But you're not the same person we thought you were. They don't know that you chose fucking some other guy over protecting their happiness. They don't know that you pretended to still love me.
I do love you. I never stopped loving you. I was just so lonely. My therapist says I was depressed.
Could you not have seen a therapist before you got into bed with someone else? Could you not have chosen what other people choose? Medication and a thorough and almost certainly ineffective rehashing of your childhood?
He stood and started hunting about for his clothes, scattered on the floor. She'd seen him do this so many times, in many houses, many hotels, over years and years. She could predict the order in which he'd dress himself, the point where he'd sit down, the point where he'd no longer be tempted to get back into bed.
And why were you lonely? I was there, the kids were there, you have friends. What the fuck, Anne? Are you like the kids, requiring constant entertainment?
He was disgusted with her, and with himself for sleeping with her. He had sunk to her level, maybe even lower. He felt nauseous. This whole thing was killing him from the inside out. He suddenly stopped dressing and flared at her.
Do you know I've lost 10 pounds in the last 2 weeks? I've had to leave meetings and go cry in the car. I can't cry in the bathrooms at work in case someone hears me and thinks I'm losing it. Yesterday, I told them I had to leave early to pick up the kids, and one of the other partners asked if maybe it was time to get a babysitter. I told him to fuck off, which maybe wasn't the best choice, so maybe I'll lose my job, and then we'll all be homeless, and your destruction of our family will be complete. Maybe then you and your boyfriend can move back into our house and take the kids from me, and then I'll just wander the fucking streets like the total loser I am.
His voice had risen so much that by the end he was screaming, his face red and wet with tears. Someone banged on the apartment wall, and Charlie banged back, furious, his vehemence knocking a picture down and breaking it.
We can't go back, Anne. There's no back to go to. See that picture?
He pointed.
We can no more fix our marriage than we can fix that glass. It's fucked. We're fucked. It's done. And it's your fault.
She was still curled on the bed, sobbing when he slammed the door. The breeze moved her hair across her cheek like a kiss. 33. The day of Iris's birthday dawned bright and fair, as it usually did. Not just her birthday, of course, but most days in Southern California, with their dulcet winds and spangled sunshine. There's a reason every other major city in the U.S. looks down on Los Angeles and makes fun of its supposed lack of culture, and it rhymes with Bellacy. The reason Los Angeles doesn't care what other cities think of it? It's too busy looking at all its pretty girls in sundresses and happy people living out their dreams and eating well. Never mind San Francisco. You can keep the fog. Anyway, Iris's birthday was another of those lovely days. Roscoe the dog had given Iris a cashmere dressing gown, as soft and silky as a newborn's earlobe. Wyatt had given her a chew toy in the shape of a birthday cake, and Sarah had given her a hand-painted mug with Mom on it. There was a pause as Iris unwrapped it.
I like the colors you chose, she said gently. But I'll be blunt. I just have the two hands.
Wyatt went off into gales of laughter.
That's my present! I made that! It's a sword!
He grabbed the mug from his mom and pointed at the third arm.
See? It's a sword! And you have a helmet on!
Sarah also looked confused.
I thought that was her hair.
Wyatt snorted.
No, it's gray. She doesn't have gray hair. It should have been silver, but they didn't have silver.
He looked at Iris, crestfallen.
They didn't have silver. Sorry.
She hugged him close.
It is so perfect and awesome, and I love you so much. Silver would have been too much. This way is more realistic. I look like a real knight this way, ready to fight, and a little bit grubby.
He smiled gratefully at her.
They probably did get pretty messy. Of course, fighting dragons is sweaty work.
He was still concerned.
I put the names on the presents. I guess I put the wrong ones on. Roscoe picked out the birthday cake toy.
It's a very good choice. Although I suspect he'll enjoy it more than I will.
She took an experimental nibble on the chew toy, which made a sad noise.
It tastes like cake.
She looked at Roscoe with new respect. Roscoe wagged his tail and offered to take it off her hands, if it was bothering her. Wyatt needed reassurance.
Do you like the mug as much as the pink coat thing?
More.
Really? You seem to really like the pink thing.
I hadn't seen the mug yet, and I thought it was from Roscoe, remember? He doesn't usually get things like that. His funds are so limited. I wanted to be encouraging.
Can I go watch TV now?
Iris turned to her bedroom window, which looked out onto the treetops that surrounded their house. From her bed, she lived in the forest.
Why don't you have some breakfast first, and then you can call the other kids and see if...
Her phone pinged, and she reached for it.
Happy birthday, you old fart,
read a text from Francis.
Does Wyatt want to come up here for pancakes? You can have a birthday breakfast in bed.
Yes,
she texted back. That would be awesome.
Sending Milo. Have fun.
Put on some clothes and go downstairs to wait for Milo, baby. You're going to your auntie's for pancakes. Wyatt yelped and sped off, happy to spend time with his older cousins. They often let him on their computers and were teaching him Minecraft.
Iris looked at Sarah.
Is there any coffee? Her wife reached for the birthday mug in Iris's hand.
Yes, and fresh cinnamon rolls from Acme.
Iris snuggled back under the covers.
You spoil me.
Well, now that Wyatt's gone, replied Sarah, I plan to spoil you some more.
She did a dramatic stripper slide around the bedroom door and nearly fell down the stairs. When they were done laughing, Sarah went to get breakfast. Once the rolls were finished and the icing had been licked off of fingers, Sarah rolled over onto her tummy and regarded her wife thoughtfully.
I want to talk to you about something, she began.
Iris nodded.
Me too, she said. But you can go first.
Sarah laid her head down on the sheet for a moment, and Iris frowned.
Is something wrong?
No,
Sarah replied.
But this stuff with Anne is making me think.
She looked at Iris.
And the other night, you seemed worried. Of course, it could have been a brilliant double bluff, and you're already cheating on me. Iris grinned. I assure you I'm not sleeping around, and if you are, please don't tell me, because then I'd have to smother you with this pillow.
She picked one up and shoved it at Sarah, who snatched it away, tucking it under herself.
Iris watched her wife's shoulders move, the angles of her collarbone, the curve of her lower back, and decided that whatever Sarah had to say better be quick, because she really wanted to take advantage of this time alone.
Go on then, what's up?
She mock frowned.
Am I too old for you now?
There were 3 months separating their ages. It had become a running joke. Sarah didn't answer, just raised an eyebrow and waited for Iris to be quiet.
Look, I didn't mention this before because it wasn't settled, but I've been offered a film.
A film?
Yes, a movie. A good one.
When?
Soon.
Where?
China.
Sarah laughed briefly.
All the money's in China right now, and somehow the money for this film came attached to principal photography over there. It's fine. It's good. It's a real studio, real people. It's going to be great.
Iris sat up and pulled another pillow onto her lap, holding it tight. She leaned over and picked up her coffee cup, only to find it empty.
Is it a good part?
She needed more coffee, although maybe she'd had too much already. Her heart was really loud. Sarah sat up too and knelt in front of her wife. She watched the way Iris held her cup, saw the tremor in her wrists, knew she was upset. Damn it, she should have waited till after the party.
Baby, this is what I'm saying. I want you and Wyatt to come with me. It'll be 3 months. He's only in first grade. He can easily catch up. You're not doing anything.
I'm not. Sarah shook her head.
You're taking care of Wyatt. You're taking care of me. You're treading water waiting for something. I don't know what. Come with me to China. It'll be fun.
She waggled her eyebrows.
The studio is paying for a house.
I put it in the deal.
Iris thought about it.
Why did she feel so angry? She was married to an actress, a successful one. Traveling for work was par for the course, and had always been fun, even if it wasn't quite as fun as Sarah thought it was. A lot of waiting around for her to be finished for the day. A lot of taking care of Wyatt without any of her usual equipment or surroundings. But a big movie would be great for Sarah. For all of them.
What does Anne have to do with this?
Sarah looked confused.
What do you mean?
You said, this stuff with Anne is making me think. Sarah smiled, relieved.
Just that it reminds me how important you are to me, you and Wyatt.
Iris sat very still, trying to get a handle on what she was feeling and what she wanted to say. Sarah frowned at her.
What's wrong? I'm just saying it would be nice to be together. You've never been to China. Wyatt's a perfect age to go.
She studied her wife's face, a little lost about why this wasn't being greeted with the enthusiasm she had expected. Iris had always loved to travel.
We can get a tutor there if that's what you're worried about.
How long have you known about this? Iris felt wrong-footed, as if something had just been sprung on her, but she also knew that was a ridiculous reaction. Why couldn't she just be happy for Sarah? Why couldn't she feel good about this? She'd wanted to bring up the baby, wanted the discussion this weekend to be about her, about them. It was her birthday. It wasn't fair.
Sarah shrugged. I don't know, a week or two, maybe. I talked to the producer a month ago and forgot about it mostly. You know what it's like. It came back last week. We had some back and forth. I have to give them an answer on Monday.
You didn't say yes yet?
Sarah leaned forward and looked closely at Iris.
No, sweetheart. Why are you freaking out? Talk to me.
Iris took a deep breath. I want to have another baby, she said. And I want to do it soon.
An hour or two later, they'd reached the silent stage. Sarah was open to a baby,
after China. Iris was open to China after a baby was begun. They'd argued all through getting dressed, and now they were sitting out on the deck, trying not to start the argument up again, when the front door opened. Francis's voice floated through the house.
Hey! Where are you hiding?
Iris called out to her, and Sarah got up to go greet her. I brought your kid back, said Francis, who had also brought her entire family.
And a cake. I heard it was someone's birthday.
Iris raised her eyebrows and turned in her comfy wicker chair to see the cake.
That's enormous.
Francis grinned and put it down on the table.
I lost 2 pounds last week. I need to gain them back as quickly as possible.
I like your methods. The doorbell rang. Sarah looked at Iris and shrugged a question.
Are you expecting someone?
Iris made a face. Sarah went to open the door and reappeared with Bill and Lucas. Lucas was carrying a present.
Oh, said Bill, looking around. Are we interrupting something? We just wanted to drop off a present.
Iris stood up, looking surprised.
How did you even know it's my birthday? That's so nice of you. Come on in.
Lucas looked a little lost, but then Wyatt ran up to him and they sped off upstairs, presumably to begin disassembling something.
Would you like a cup of tea?
Asked Sarah, trying to pull her shit together. All she wanted to do was pause time so she could work things out with Iris, but of course time was as uncooperative as it always was. You had to stay married in the brief pauses between being married, and those pauses so often had to be rescheduled. Bill smiled, oblivious to any undercurrents in the room. He was in on the secret, of course, and was enjoying his job as first surprise guest.
That would be great.
The doorbell rang again. Iris frowned at Sarah, who was looking a little stressed. A vague suspicion started in her tummy, but it was just Charlie and the kids. Theo immediately disappeared upstairs, but Kate stayed with her dad. She was also carrying a present, and Charlie appeared to have brought a case of champagne.
Hi, he said, putting the cardboard box on the table. I thought you guys might like this. I got it at work for something. Can't remember what.
He trailed off.
Hi, Michael. How's it going?
He went over to chat, and the doorbell rang again. When Sarah left to answer it, Iris turned quickly to Francis and lowered her voice.
What's happening? How do you mean? Replied Francis, determined not to be the one who ruined the surprise.
Francis, Sarah and I are having a horrible fight because I want another baby and she wants to go to China. And if you don't tell me what's going on, I'm going to fucking hit the roof.
She took her cousin by the arm. Spill it, Frank.
Fair enough. Cousins first. Francis leaned in.
Sarah is throwing you the world's gentlest surprise party, and I don't care what you two are fighting about. She's been planning it for weeks, and Wyatt is about to shit himself with anticipation. So put your argument on hold and make it work, okay?
She pulled back a bit and fixed her cousin with a firm look.
I realize it's your party, and you can cry if you want to. But wait until afterward, okay?
Iris looked at her and nodded. This block needs a good day. Added Francis. And I pick today. Iris nodded again and poured herself a glass of champagne. This time the guests were Lily and her daughters, Annabelle and Claire. Kate was excited to see Annabelle, and the two of them ran off to play. Claire came over to Iris and smiled up at her.
Hi, Iris. I'm Claire. Do you remember me?
Iris smiled.
Yes, Claire. I've known you since you were very small. How could I forget you?
Well, said Claire, you're old. My mom calls me Annabelle all the time, and she grew me in her stomach, so you know.
A good point.
Iris drank some champagne.
Did you bring a present?
Yeah,
said the little girl. She paused.
But don't tell Sarah, because I think it's a surprise. It's not a very good present. I don't mind telling you because Mom picked it. I wanted to get Sarah a game programmer Barbie, but my mom got her a stupid jug or something. Claire rolled her eyes. And a piece of paper for a massage, which is just ridiculous.
This was a new word for Claire, and she was enjoying it. She said it again, with emphasis.
Ridiculous!
Adults, agreed Iris, making a face.
Right, said Claire.
She sighed a tiny little sigh, then added,
Still, I got the game programmer Barbie, so you know that was good. She has a headset for her cell phone and a laptop of her own. But you can't take it off her hand, I don't think, which is weird. I mean, you need to put it down to pee for sure.
She looked thoughtful for a moment, as if running the logistics of peeing while holding a laptop, but then shrugged and ran off. Iris caught Lily's eye and shook her head and grinned as Lily mouthed, sorry, and rolled her eyes. Someone had clearly propped the front door open, because now a steady stream of friends with food and presents were arriving, and Sarah's grand plan was revealed in all its genius. Iris caught her eye across the kitchen and smiled tightly, raising the second glass of champagne that had miraculously appeared in her hand. Sarah looked back at her for a moment, then looked away. She'd wanted so much for this day, and now she just wanted it to be over. An hour later, the party was in full swing. Two different sets of people had brought very small babies, who were being passed around like sleeping loaves of bread. Iris had one on her lap at that moment, but wasn't sure whose it was. It appeared to be a girl, based on the pink bunny cap, but you could never tell with newborns. A small roar came from the front room as someone showed up with an even more exciting small thing, a 3-month-old dachshund puppy. And Iris was starting to feel a little bit tipsy. She could see Frances's cake on the table and resolved to go get herself a piece. Sarah came over and knelt by her chair.
Are you having fun?
As far as everyone else was concerned, the hostess was having a fantastic time. But Iris could see her wife was very much a working actress. Iris nodded and was about to try to make peace, when suddenly they heard raised voices from the other room. A glass shattered. Anne had arrived. As Sarah and Iris came into the front room, Charlie was hissing at his wife.
You shouldn't even be here.
I was invited, she replied, from where she knelt on the floor, picking up the pieces of the glass he'd dropped. Iris is more my friend than she is yours.
I think you forfeited all connection to the neighborhood when you slept around, Anne, said Charlie,
who'd clearly had more than a few glasses of wine. Several people were trapped at the far side of the living room, where they had been chatting in a small group before Charlie and Anne had collided at the front door. They looked plaintively at Sarah, hoping for an airlift. Sarah stepped between them.
Hi, guys. How about you take this outside?
Anne looked apologetic, but Charlie was past it.
How about this bitch just leaves, if her legs come together sufficiently for walking? Wow, said a voice from across the room, although it wasn't clear who had said it.
Sarah firmed up her voice a little.
Charlie, this isn't the place for this. We're all here to celebrate Iris's birthday, and there are lots of little kids here, including yours. So let's just table this discussion for now.
She touched his arm, but he shook her off.
You broke my heart, Anne.
He leaned forward and poked his wife in the throat, making her step back.
I've loved you ever since we met, and we have kids, and they love you too, and you just don't give a shit, do you?
I do, Anne whispered, her face pale as she turned to leave. I'm so sorry, Sarah. I shouldn't have come.
It's okay, Anne, said Sarah.
She turned as she felt Iris's hand on her elbow. Her wife was right behind her, not a hell of a lot less drunk than Charlie.
What the heck's going on? She whispered in Sarah's ear.
Sarah turned up her palms, watching Charlie's face carefully.
It's not okay. It's so fucking messed up, it's beyond comprehension, he said loudly, grabbing Anne by the arm.
Bill showed up, having just diverted a set of children who were heading in this direction.
Hey, guys, you can be heard in the garden, and the kids are getting worried. Fuck off, Bill. Your wife left you too, right? Maybe there's something wrong with the water on the street. It turns wives into whores.
Charlie wavered slightly, but wouldn't let go of Anne.
Hey, Anne, maybe we could go home for another guilt fuck like the other day before I found out why you were suddenly so hot for me.
Tears came into his eyes.
I was so happy.
Let me go, Charlie, said Anne, pulling away. You want me to leave, and I want to go. We'll talk later when you sober up.
No, let's talk now, he said,
and started dragging her out of the front door.
I want to talk now.
Bill looked over at Michael, who had appeared with Francis, and all of them followed Charlie and Anne out into the street, with Iris in tow. Sarah closed the front door behind them, although several faces appeared at the windows. Now all the neighbors were outside, with all their kids inside. What could possibly go wrong? Sarah and Francis both kept looking back at the house, torn between competing responsibilities. Bill tried to reason with Charlie.
Charlie, let her go for now. You guys can talk another time. Come in and have some coffee, and something to eat.
Charlie turned on him.
You're such a nice guy, Billy. Why'd your wife leave, eh? Why did Julie run off? Maybe we're too nice, that's our problem.
Bill ignored him.
Yeah, we're awesome, Charlie. Let's go get something to eat. Yeah? No, but really, where did Julie go, Bill? She was here, and then she wasn't. Is she fucking some other guy, Bill, is that it? Or some other woman? Or two other women? Or did she just get sick of the same old cock, was that the problem? Jesus, Charlie, get a fucking grip, said Michael,
who could see Bill was starting to get angry.
You and your wife are having a problem right now, don't drag us into it. Shut up, Michael. Just because you and your fat wife have it all together, everything perfect. Of course, you never have sex anymore.
Anne pulled away from Charlie suddenly and started down the street, tears streaming down her face. Francis walked quickly after her. Anne, let me drive you home.
No, shouted Charlie. Let her walk. Let her stumble into traffic right under a tractor trailer. I wish you were dead, Anne. I really fucking do.
He turned to Bill.
Don't you wish your wife was dead too, Bill? Better dead than in someone else's bed, right?
He began to laugh.
That rhymes.
Bill suddenly stepped forward and punched Charlie with enough force to lift him right off his feet. He landed on his back and lay there, stunned and suddenly sober.
My wife is nearly dead, you asshole, hissed Bill, his fist still clenched. My wife has been in another state for 3 months getting treated for cancer, and it's killing her.
He was furious.
And I'm stuck here, trying to hold it together for Lucas, because he's only 4 years old, and Julie wanted to go face her shit alone, because she thought he needed me more than she did. He thinks she's working on a movie somewhere, and twice a day she drags herself into clothes and puts on a fucking wig and props her ass up on a pillow and Skypes him so he knows how much she loves both of us. We're doing our fucking job like you should be. Don't you think I'd rather she was with some other man? I would give my fucking arm for Julie to be having an affair instead of fighting for her life all alone in fucking Minnesota.
Daddy? A small voice came from the doorway, and they all turned to see Lucas heading out of the house. You said the F word. He looked shocked, but had clearly only heard the last few words. Bill looked at his son. His face relaxed, and those close enough could see the effort it took. Lucas had no idea. Bill held out his hand.
Hey, Chief. What's up?
Nothing. I just wanted to see you.
Do you want to go home?
Can we call Mommy? I want to tell her you said the F word.
He noticed Charlie on the ground and hesitated. Then he went over, as little children will.
Did you fall over?
He stuck out his hand to help, but Charlie just looked at him for a moment, and then lay back down on the grass. Lucas frowned and turned to his dad, who picked him up and held him close.
Charlie's fine, Lucas. Don't worry about it. Shall we go call Mom so you can tell on me?
They started to walk away, skirting Charlie where he was on the grass, shamed and silent.
That was a great party, Daddy.
Lucas's little voice piped back.
Did you see me eating cake?
Yeah, buddy. Was it good?
Yeah. Mommy's gonna be so mad with you for swearing.
The little boy giggled, resting his head on his father's shoulder, his hand gathering up the fabric of his daddy's t-shirt and holding it tight. They crossed the road and walked away. Charlie sat up, wiping his mouth and weeping. Anne pulled open the car door, and Francis went around to the driver's side. Iris, Michael, and Sarah just stood there. Iris wasn't feeling so good. A short man walked up, pushing a large trolley.
Are either of you Sarah?
Sarah nodded.
I've got your bouncy castle, he said.
He made an apologetic face.
I know you wanted Spider-Man, but some studio exec threw a fit and got the last one. What you have here is a deluxe.
He stressed the word deluxe.
Elsa's frozen castle.
He paused, aware that this might not fly if this was a boys-only party.
With a giant Olaf thrown in gratis. No charge for the 6-foot snowman.
Iris suddenly leaned forward and threw up on the grass. There was a short pause. Then the bouncy castle guy said,
Fine. No snowman, then.
34. Frances woke up the next day with an emotional hangover. She closed her eyes and lay in bed for a moment, not ready to face the day. Driving Anne home had turned out to be the last straw. She'd lost patience for the other woman, maybe at the worst moment to do so. But hey, Anne's husband had just told the neighborhood she was fat and had no sex life, and that was, you know, awkward. Anne was temporarily staying at the Palazzo, an apartment building across the street from the park where the kids played soccer on Saturdays. The Palazzo was in many ways the secret long-stay hotel Angelinos never told tourists about. Some people lived there year-round, sure, but a large part of its business was during pilot season, and in general it served the industry. Studios owned apartments there and would put up actors and directors when they needed to. People would rent furnished apartments for 3 or 4 months while shooting a pilot, or some other short-lived project. The building was also across the street from the Grove, a big outdoor mall, and was painted the kind of ochre normally seen in hotel paintings of the Italian Riviera. It was a color not found in nature, yet somehow it worked. Anne had basically lost her shit all the way from Iris's party to the Palazzo. The security guard waved them into the parking lot, with not even the slightest flicker at the sounds of distress coming from inside the car, having seen it all several times. Anne's apartment was a 2-bedroom on the ground floor, dark and cool, and decorated in timeless and faceless style. She'd barely made a mark on it. When Frances had looked in the fridge, hoping to make Anne a cup of tea or something, she found literally nothing. The cupboards were also entirely bare. What on earth have you been eating, Anne? She asked. Anne had reached the staring portion of her distress and turned her head toward her friend. I go across the street when I get hungry. She'd stopped crying, but her eyelids were puffy, and for the first time that Frances could remember, she looked like shit. Farmer's market, you know. Frances nodded. Are you hungry now? Anne shook her head. I think I'm going to be sick. She went into the bathroom, and Frances heard the toilet seat hit the tank. But then there was silence. Frances went and stood at the window, looking out through the manicured greenery. It was quiet out there, the occasional and distant ping of the elevator the only sound to be heard over the ever-present hum of pool pumps. A slender girl in sweatpants and furry boots came out through a door, leading the world's smallest dog on the world's thinnest leash. It looked like she'd tied a cotton ball to a piece of dental floss. Frances watched the dog poop a lentil, then sit and snooze while the girl conducted a lengthy operation on her cell phone.
"I've got nothing to throw up," Anne said, returning. "I can't breathe properly. Do you think I should go to the ER?"
She sat on the edge of the overstuffed coral sofa. Frances turned and looked at her. "You're having a panic attack, and your blood sugar is zero. Go get something to eat, and ask for a paper bag to put it in. Then you'll have something to breathe into." She turned to go. Anne said, "Please don't leave me." Frances said, with more than a hint of exasperation in her voice, "Look, Anne, I don't want to kick you when you're down, but you need to get it together." Anne's eyes filled with tears.
"You're angry with me."
"I'm angrier with your husband, but seeing as you're the one that put him into this filthy mood, then I guess I'm a little angry with you too. But now I need to get back to my kids, and I can't stay and hold your hand. Call your mom, call your brothers. Pull it together, Anne." She'd walked out knowing Anne wasn't going to pull it together, and comfortable with the fact that she really didn't give a fuck. Now, the next morning, Frances felt exhausted. She turned her head to look at Michael and found him already awake and looking at her. "Jesus wept," she said. "You scared me."
"Score," he replied, smiling.
"Why are you awake? Are you okay?" She pulled her hand out from under the sheets and stroked his head. His face was so dear to her and so familiar.
"Yeah. Yesterday sucked. I had bad dreams about it."
She nodded. "Yeah. Let's not do that to each other. Let's grow old and be boring together forever." She paused. It was a bit embarrassing.
"The massive revelation that we don't have a lot of sex?"
She nodded. He shrugged.
"I'm happy. Are you happy?"
She nodded.
"Then fuck the neighbors. Who gives a shit what they think?"
He looked closely at her.
"Do you think Charlie knew there was a problem before?"
Frances said nothing, so he continued.
"What if you're really cheating on me this whole time, and just doing a really good job of hiding it?"
She laughed. "The idea of willingly taking my clothes off in front of another person is absurd. If you and I divorced, I would sew my vagina shut, get 15 cats, and let myself go completely." Michael laughed.
"That seems extreme. You're wonderful. I expect you would be a hot commodity on the open market."
Frances rolled her eyes. "Yeah, because an extra 30 pounds and 3 kids is what all single men want. I can read the dating profile now. Single man seeks overweight middle-aged woman to ignore his input while raising her children. Willing to share school run and homework duties in return for annual blowjob. Not guaranteed." She sat up and threw back the covers. "And Playboy called me the other day, hoping I could make time for a centerfold shoot." She stood and faced him, naked and smiling. "Because this," she indicated her gentle rolls, "is incredibly hot."
"I love looking at you."
"You're used to it."
"That's true. I'm used to it, and I love it."
Frances sat back down and leaned forward to whisper in his ear. "I went to a sex shop the other day and bought a vibrator and some fur-lined handcuffs." Michael burst out laughing.
"My penis isn't good enough for you?"
Frances reached under the covers. "It's totally fine, but I don't feel it vibrating." There was a pause. Then she smiled. "That isn't vibrating."
"Look, it's movement. Give me a break."
"Mommy!"
Lally's voice rang down the hall.
"And that's you,"
said Michael, snuggling under the sheets.
"Good luck hiding that shit from the kids, by the way."
Down the street, Charlie was horribly hungover and ashamed of himself. It was not a good combination, and he was wondering if he would ever feel like eating again, or be able to face the outside world. Sadly, sheltering in place was not an option in this particular battle.
"Hey, Theo,"
he said to his son, gently shaking the sleeping child.
"It's time to get up for school."
Theo grunted and pulled the covers over his head.
"Come on, buddy. Time to shake a leg. Do you want some OJ?"
The lump shook its head. Charlie wandered down the hall to Kate's room and found her already dressed and sitting on her floor, playing with her sizable collection of little animal figures. There were ponies, weirdly big-headed animals of all varieties, and the obligatory elongated dolls with odd makeup on. He didn't know what they were called, and thought they looked like extras in a German fetish movie. But who was he to judge?
"You're already dressed,"
he said, surprised. Kate nodded, but didn't say anything.
"Do you want some breakfast?"
She shook her head.
"Toast?"
"No."
"Eggs?"
"No."
"Cheerios?"
Finally, she turned to look at him and frowned.
"No thanks, Daddy. I'm not hungry. I woke up really early and got myself something already."
"You did?"
She nodded, already back at her game.
"Okay, well, great. Time for school in 20 minutes or so, okay?"
She looked back at him.
"Are you taking us?"
"Do you want me to?"
Back to the dolls.
"No. I like when Francis takes us."
"Okay."
He heard noise from Theo's room and went back there. Theo was sitting on the edge of his bed, pulling on his socks, more or less dressed. His eyes were swollen, and Charlie stepped over to feel his forehead. Theo ducked his head away and frowned at his dad.
"I'm fine," he snapped.
"How long until school?"
"About 20 minutes.
Theo went back to his socks, ignoring Charlie for the 30 more seconds he stood there, wondering how to reach his kids, and why he was suddenly the bad guy when Anne was the one who cheated. As if reading his mind, Theo suddenly looked up and said,
"You know, you could just forgive Mom and let her come back, then everything would be just like it was before." "No, it wouldn't. It won't ever be the same."
For a moment, his son looked at him blankly. Then he pulled on his shoes and stood, pushing past his father and closing his bedroom door behind him, leaving Charlie standing there alone. Lucas wasn't awake yet when Bill Skyped Julie. He told her about the day before, and she surprised him by laughing out loud. He hadn't heard it in a while, and it was worth some bruised knuckles.
"You punched him? Really?"
She was in bed, of course, the tablet propped up on her arm, and her face was so close it was almost easy to pretend she was in the same bed as Bill. She smiled, her warmth undimmed by weeks of chemotherapy, even as it robbed her of her eyelashes, pubic hair, and immune system.
"How very macho and unexpected of you,"
he grinned.
"It was unexpected even to me. I didn't know I was going to do it until I did it, if you know what I mean. I just got pissed off with his fucking whining."
"Oh, come on. His heart is broken."
"No," Bill said firmly. "His ego is broken. And he's sad as shit that his wife let him down, but he'll recover."
"Don't be a dick, Bill. What about his kids? I'd be fucking devastated if you did that to me, to Lucas."
"How do you know I'm not doing it right now? I could be sleeping with a wide variety of lovely young women while you're out of the picture."
She laughed. "I assume you are, because I know how much free time you have. It's easy to take care of a small kid and work full-time, right?"
"Yeah, it's a walk in the park."
She stopped laughing.
"See, this is why..."
He interrupted her.
"Don't even go there, Jules. I wanted you to stay here for treatment, and I still think you were wrong. I'm your husband. I want to take care of you.
She was firm. I need you to take care of Lucas, and I need to take care of myself. This way is easier. He sighed.
For you.
And for you, and most of all for him.
Then they just looked at each other, until Lucas appeared sleepily behind Bill, his hair sticking up at all angles.
Iris was talking on the phone to her brother Archie.
Mom said you guys are fighting.
Iris could hear Archie's kids yelling in the background, thousands of miles away. Her brother lived in Ireland, married to a gorgeous woman somewhat like their father had been, charming and dreamy and unambitious and exhausting. He loved her, loved their four kids, loved the green grass of Ireland, and hated the rain. Of all her brothers, he was the one she was closest with.
Did she?
Iris slowly pulled her coffee cup across the table toward herself.
What did she actually say?
She said you want another baby and Sarah won't let you have one.
Iris made a face. That's not true.
Which part?
The not letting me part. Sarah is open to having another baby. She just got offered a movie and we're trying to work out the details.
Her brother waited, hearing the unspoken in her voice.
And yes, I want one and she wants one less.
Didn't you discuss this years ago, when you had Wyatt? Presumably you did.
Sure, but like you do when nothing is real or binding. We said we were going to have a dozen kids. We didn't mean it.
But you'd like another.
Yes, but not if it costs me my marriage. She waited while he settled a dispute over a ball, sipping her coffee and watching birds peck about on her lawn. She wondered if birds thought anything of the people they saw milling about below them. Probably just wondered what was keeping them on the ground, lazy bastards.
I'm back. Kieran felt strongly that the one who scored the goal should be the one who got to throw it back into play, but Jenny disagreed.
She's in goal?
Exactly. She pointed out she didn't get to really kick the ball at all.
She has a sound point.
Yeah, but she illustrated it by kicking her brother in the ankle, which undermined her position.
Iris smiled. Maybe you could just send me one of yours.
I'd be thrilled.
He had a drink, too. She could hear him sipping.
So, what's going on now?
Now we're stepping around each other carefully, both trying not to be the one who starts it up again.
Archie made a surprised noise.
That isn't like you two. Normally you guys can't stop talking.
Iris sighed. I know, it's weird. I should have just mentioned it like a year ago when I first realized I wanted another kid. But I got nervous for no reason that she was going to flip out. And then I waited a little longer and a little longer, and then it turned into a big thing in my head, even though it wasn't. And then one of the neighbors had an affair and her marriage blew up, and suddenly that seemed like a far worse outcome than just having one kid.
You're losing it. Sarah's always been very laid back. And you pretty much always get your way, right? And she's not the cheating sort, and neither are you. Or at least, neither of you used to be.
Yeah, but nobody thought this neighbor was either.
She stood to go empty her cup.
Do you and Carol fight a lot?
Of course, everyone fights. But mostly we talk about the kids, or about moving back to the States, or about what's for dinner. We're sort of in a holding pattern right now. I don't know.
Why don't marriages just wheel along on their own? Once you've given them a good push at the beginning, they should just keep trundling along.
She could hear a shrug in her brother's voice, and got a mental image of his tall frame, his angular face, and missed him.
If the path was always smooth, then maybe they would. But if we can stretch this metaphor too far... It isn't smooth, and all those bumps slow it down and send it off course. I think of it more like one of those old-fashioned hoops you see in Victorian illustrations, you know?
The ones with the stick?
Yeah. You have to keep it going by poking and prodding, and marriage is like that, maybe. Basically wheeling along,
but needing a poke from time to time.
You need a poke. He laughed.
That's a true story. Okay, I gotta go.
The noise in the background had changed to the dull roar of actual warfare.
Someone's crying, and I'm not sure who.
Got it. Talk soon?
Yeah. Love to Sarah, and hug Wyatt, okay? Stop fighting and sort your shit out.
You sort your own shit out.
Okay, babe.
He hung up. Iris thought about him, about his wedding, about her other brothers, about her father and now her mother, all alone. Then she got up and went to find Sarah and sort out her shit. 35. After dropping all the kids at school, Frances had a high school committee thing to go to. She found herself wondering about the future. Next year, Lally would be in kindergarten. Maybe it was time to get a job outside the family. It would be nice to bring in extra money, but she knew, because she wasn't an idiot, that she would just be adding to all the shit she had to do, because everyone knows the division of labor between couples isn't equal. She daydreamed a meeting between herself and Michael, where they shared out the domestic duties, carefully writing them all on a whiteboard. Pet care? She said in her daydream, holding a green marker.
What's involved with that?
Michael asked, looking up from his increasingly long list. His pencil wavered. He liked pets. This might be one for him. Feeding, walking, pee-poo, vomit cleanup, minor first aid, flea medication and deworming, vet visit scheduling and attending, and anything else that comes up. He was shaking his head.
Nah, that sounds more like a you kind of thing. What else you got?
Laundry?
What goes with that?
Well, you pick up all the clothes on the floor and sniff them to see if they're clean. Then you wash them, dry them, fold them, and either leave them in a giant pile somewhere to be rummaged through, or you carefully put Lally's away and deliver Milo's and Ava's to their rooms, telling them to put them away themselves, only to discover them lying on the floor the next day, unworn. And you spend time pairing socks, time that could easily be spent doing pretty much anything else. Plus, every so often you have to field the desperately delivered comment that nothing is clean in this house. Or hunt through the dirty laundry for some particular piece of clothing a child wants. She remembered something else. Of course, soccer uniforms are bundled in there too. I like to do that at 9 o'clock on Friday evening in a panic. But you can do it on a Sunday morning and feel smug if you like. And then, when the meeting was over, she'd drop a folder the size of Poughkeepsie on the desk in front of him.
What's this?
He would ask. And she would reply, It's the contents of my head from the last 14 years of taking care of everything. She found a parking space and sat there smiling for a moment. Then she sighed, rolled some calming essential oils on her wrists, ineffectively, and headed into the cafe. Like childbirth, volunteering to organize a school event was way more painful than you expected it to be. But the minute the event was over, you forgot how awful it was. It's the only possible explanation for why those lovely but exhausted women do it every year. This year, Frances had decided to join the parents' spring fling committee at Ava's school. The spring fling was the school's major fundraiser. It had a theme, a silent auction, a raffle, and a tendency to produce the kind of drunken behavior that kept the school gate gossips warm for the rest of the year. 3 minutes into the meeting, Frances was already kicking herself, and it hadn't even officially begun. Sitting in a coffee shop around the large central table were a half dozen women who mostly wished they were somewhere else. Frances knew only one of them, and had already forgotten the names of the others. One of them was clearly new to this game, because she was talking about her daughter. Rule number one when meeting school parents you don't know, never talk about your child. Think about Fight Club and double down.
Whatever you say, we'll get back to the other kids and be spread around school in no time. One time, Frances had mentioned Ava was getting braces, and by the time Ava got home that same day, everyone in her class had asked her what color bands she was going to put on.
"Why do they even care?" Frances had asked, bemused.
"I don't know, but why did you tell them?"
Ava had been deeply annoyed and went on and on about feeling violated, until Frances had had to drift off into her mental happy place just to survive. In her happy place, there was a gentle hum of bees and birdsong, and no one ever said anything. But anyway.
"So," this mother said, innocently enough, "Flora Grace just got shortlisted for the Art Museum's painting contest. Isn't that fun?"
A tall blonde mom turned to another and said, "Didn't Butterfly Absence win that last year?"
"Yes," her crony replied. "I think she did. It was before the drug thing, of course."
She turned to the innocent mom.
"Does your daughter know angle poise, whatever the fuck? In eighth grade?"
The innocent one, slowly realizing she had transgressed in some way she didn't really understand, shook her head.
"Well," continued the other mom, "I think she got shortlisted too, and she's super, super talented. We should introduce the two of them."
"We should," said the tall blonde. "I'm sure they'd have a lot to talk about."
Having taken ownership of this topic, she then turned to Frances.
"So, how's Ava enjoying eighth grade? I hear she's doing much better."
Fortunately for Frances, this was not her first rodeo, so she merely smiled and nodded. The best defense against aggressively competitive parents is a simple one. Silence. Followed by a definitive changing of the subject. To wit.
"So the fling, what's the theme this year?"
"Well," said the tall blonde, pulling out a stack of glossy magazines,
"I was thinking classic 70s spank rags, winged hair, split beavers, and a disturbing amount of pubic hair compared to today's sanitized internet porn."
"Great idea," said the woman next to her.
"And we could have an S&M raffle to bring in the 50 Shades folks. Maybe we could get a ball gag in school colors."
None of this happened, of course, but imagining it kept Frances sane throughout the rest of the meeting, and she managed to get out without volunteering for anything more onerous than coat check. After that, she had to pick up medication for one of the dogs, who had developed a skin condition only slightly more expensive to treat than the aforementioned braces had been, and go to Staples for printer paper. She came out with the paper, a blank composition book with kittens on the front, Lally, a pack of monster pencil toppers in a variety of colors, Milo, and several to-do list pads with humorous headlines, Ava. She forgot the ink toner cartridge she also needed, and had to go back, of course. It never failed. She resolved to keep one of the to-do pads for herself. Then she went home for an hour, during which she emptied and loaded the dishwasher, moved laundry through the system, scheduled a doctor's appointment for Milo, whose birthday was coming up, rescheduled an orthodontist appointment for Ava, and sat and gazed into space for nearly 10 minutes, trying to remember what it was she'd forgotten. Then she went to pick up the preschool kids. Lally was in a good mood that day, and Lucas was open to being in a good mood once he'd had some lunch and watched a show. After lunch, he surprised Frances by pulling an iPad out of his backpack.
"Look," he said. "Dad got me a thingy so I could talk to Mom, and today he let me bring it to school for show and tell."
"Does it have games?"
asked Lally, ever practical. Lucas frowned.
"No. Does yours?"
Lally shook her head.
"I don't have one."
There was a pause, and they both looked at Frances.
"Don't look at me," she said. "I don't have one either."
"Do you want to see my mom?"
asked Lucas. Frances frowned. "It's okay. She might be busy right now." He shrugged.
She won't answer if she's in a meeting or something. That's the rule. I only call once.
He'd already hit a shortcut on the screen, and a window had opened up, placing a call.